Welcome to another episode of Is This For Kids? I am Jonathan Blubbins.
I'm Katie, Mrs. Ruby.
And let us help you decide.
What?
Is social media for kids? No.
You keep doing the end at the
beginning.
I know,
because it's funny.
Is it? It just seems like you're confused.
I'm in a goofy mood because all of the teams that I love are having generational seasons and then choking towards the end.
The Lions did not have a generational season.
But
this
two
year.
Seasons before that, they did. The last two seasons. The last couple. So anyway, we're in a great mood here. We're going to do a media spotlight today.
Yeah, social media spotlight. We haven't done social media in a little while. And since there's not a lot of new kids content coming out, we're trying to give you some good like parenting media stuff to go through. And it seems like a good time to go back through the social media of it all. Did you notice that I'm wearing my
Jubilee
of Catholic missionary or digital missionaries and Catholic influencers? I was there in Rome this summer with all of the digital missionaries.
Not all of them.
No, just the ones that came to
Just the ones that were there. I was like, that's crazy. They brought all of them?
Literally, I wasn't there.
So
it was fun.
This episode can actually be really short. Phones are bad. Social media is bad. Next.
Oh, my goodness.
Next.
That is oversimplifying it, Jonathan.
Well.
Goodness gracious. I came up with five great rules for you or great tips for you. But in case you want to like a good clickbait title, this is five great social media tips.
Okay, so before we get into the five great social media tips for teens and tweens.
Yep.
What does tween even mean?
Not quite. They're between a teenager and a child. So they're like 10 to 12.
Wait, so Mike is a tween?
Yes,
at 11. A tween.
Yep.
Okay. So two quick things. One, my brother is a teacher at a high school.
Yes.
And him and I have very different opinions on almost everything, except for like the love that we have for our family and friends and sports.
Right.
But he is, I mean, high school teacher. He teaches all grades, I think freshman through senior. He is so anti-phone and anti-social media. It is crazy, like even crazier than me.
Yeah.
And they actually had a rule last year where the teacher could decide if the kids could have their phones or not in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And so he had a bin. He was the only teacher in the school that had a bin where they had to drop it in. And that's how they took attendance, which I think is genius. Mm-hmm. This year, they updated the policy where it is up to the kid if they want. So the teacher can keep the bin there, but the kid is not forced to put it in.
That's a mistake.
And yeah, I mean, he just says like, I mean, all the time, like he just catches people just looking down and there's like no authority there. Mm-hmm. So he's very anti phone and social media at the moment for young people. I think his thing is like no phone till 16, no social media till 18 or something like that. I'm like, good luck with that, buddy. In 20 years, this oldest kid's three. And then I want to share a quick story before you go into your awesome tips of this conversation I just had at my one-year-old's birthday party the other day with my son's godparent's daughter. She does this thing called DECA. Have you heard of this?
Yes.
I have never heard of it. Why is it called DECA?
It's an acronym.
Okay. Well, it's some like competition for business type stuff in high schools.
Yeah, yeah. The girls always had to wear really hideous pantsuits in my high school.
Really? Oh, yeah. So this has been a thing for like 50 years. Zing!
Yes.
So I didn't know that. I thought this is the first time I've ever heard of DECA. And she went to state recently. She went to this conference and no parents were allowed, which I think is crazy. You can't even watch it.
Yeah.
Like they could go with
it's
and stay
like
at a hotel.
You can't for model you in either.
Oh, that's crazy. You should be able to support your kids and watch and cheer them on. I get it. So one of her biggest takeaways, because I said, how was the trip? And she was like, oh, it was so fun. She said, it was unbelievably refreshing to be around normal kids that weren't just stuck with their faces in their phones like when I walk around school all day long. Mm-hmm. She's like, we'd get in the elevator and there's all these people that you've never met before and like you're having conversations and you're inviting people to go sit down at lunch and eat. And she's like, that has not been my experience in high school so far. I just thought that was, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, you get kids' phones at a young age, they're going to be glued to it like most adults are as well. What five tips do you have?
Well, thanks for that. You're awesome. I appreciate you. But having hobbies is really huge, and that's kind of part of what we're talking about and having things to expand from. So the very first tip that I would give to every single parent with regard to phones, particularly, and social media adjacent to that, is the overwhelming body of research so far suggests that a kid should not have a smartphone before the age of 14 and no social media before the age of 16. So that's like the base rule. No smartphone before 14, no social media before 16. However, I would add to that that instead of putting this as an age marker with your kids, because we are Catholics interested in growing kids in virtue, right? So rather than putting an age marker on it, I would say you need a maturity marker for it. So when you are at a stage where your kid is going to be outside without you, leaving without you, going to, you know, you're gonna drop them off at the high school football game by themselves, that's around the time that you want to get them a phone of some sort. I would keep them from having a phone with any Google abilities, so what we would call smartphone features. I would sort of turn those off for kids who haven't shown that they can handle them well. So kids who are not coming to you when they encounter something bad at school, kids who are not talking to you, kids who are not telling you, you know, about the drama that's happening in their school, those are kids you probably don't want to give a smartphone to, because they're more likely to be, you know, Googling the answers instead of talking to their parent or looking at AI. But I do say for people, it would be really smart for them to learn to lock down a smartphone so that it's effectively a dumb phone.
Which you have done. My oldest is 11, so I've not had to do this yet. Yeah. But you have done this with great success.
I have done this with great success.
To the annoyance of your children.
Yes, I give them each 1 minute of screen time when they first get their first cell phone. Before that, I actually use another company called a Bark phone that sends alerts and things like that if your kid is texting anything. But this gives them the ability to like call and text. But if you have a dumb phone that people are like, oh, I'm not going to get my kid anything, okay, but you're sacrificing the ability to have location services, which is something that you need smartphone features. And the most important thing to me that parents need to teach their kids to do is use a shared calendar.
Yeah.
So having a family calendar, like in our case, we use Apple products. So we have an Apple shared family calendar. Every kid who needs a ride to soccer practice needs to start putting their times in there. They need to put in their work schedule. I need to know where they're going to be. If they want me to participate, they need to put it in there. And that really teaches them how to like cooperate in a family. And this is one of the things with cell phones that I think we miss as parents, is that like they do have to learn to use this. You're not going to get through your adult life without a cell phone ever, unless you're really wealthy, and then you can have your assistant have
or
a
monk.
Yeah, or a monk. That's true. But like for the most part, if you're going to be a standard issue human, you need to be able to use it and use it well. So we need to start like introducing things. So when they're using that shared calendar, that helps them to display these other maturity markers for when you might be willing to give them social media. Things like letting you know in advance that they have a soccer game coming up that shows you that they have forethought about their actions. Or better yet, they know they have a soccer game coming up and they washed their uniform for it. You know that kid is going to be able to, you know, think about the consequences of their actions. If they fail to wash the uniform, they're not going to get to play. So those are virtues that we're growing in our kids before we give them the social media. Too often we're doing this out of order, where we're like, here's the thing, now learn the virtue while using the thing. Like, no, show me that you have the virtue understood, and now we're going to do the thing. So base level, no social media before 16, no smartphone before 14, but better maturity markers.
Maturity markers. I'm fine with both of those things. I do think it's important, like you just gave great examples of things you can do. You can use technology like Bark, or there's other ones out there. We have to be monitoring it. When you're giving your kids tools, we had an episode on AI recently. When you're giving your kid tools and they have the access to these tools, your job becomes 10 times more important as a parent, because you have to walk them through those tools. So for social media, my thing is, like, I did youth ministry for 15 years in the Catholic Church, and I have never seen a net positive of a 16 to 18 year old having social media. Mm-hmm. Not that there's, I make my living using social media, so I understand the benefits of it. I understand, even from a Catholic perspective, this podcast is watched on smartphones and people, and clips on social media. I get it. There can be lots of good. But the net, like, what is the purpose for having social media when you're 16 to 18? Maybe the good things can be connecting, sharing memories, seeing what your friends are doing and being able to kind of keep up and follow. But the downside is so big that we have to, as parents, I think, just be super aware of it, so that we can walk our kids through what's happening and make sure they're not falling into the pitfalls that everyone kind of falls into of, don't get jealous of things that other people are doing. Mm-hmm. Don't use it to gossip. Don't look at your likes. I know Instagram for some people has like hid how many likes you have, but not for everybody yet.
You actually select that when you put out the reel. You choose whether or not you put likes on.
See, and I'm sure some choose too.
Yeah.
Because they get a lot of likes, and like you can find yourself comparing a ton to your friends. And I think that part can be really, really dangerous. And so just being sure that if you're going to let your kid use social media, have those conversations with them so that they're not getting their worth from likes or from who they're hanging out with or from how many fun things they get to go do and post.
Absolutely. And more to the point, if you decide social media isn't for your family and you don't want your kid on it, acknowledge that your kid may get on it as soon as they get out of your house, and then they will have had no coaching on it. So that's kind of a thing. But also, your kids have very real and very reasonable complaints about not being on social media. Very often, even in Catholic circles, most kids are communicating through Snapchat instead of through text message. They don't even text message each other. They send the grossest, ugliest picture of themselves looking down into their phone and then put a text across it. It's really weird. But that's what they're doing.
Are you going to the game tonight?
Yeah. And it's just a text message, but with their face behind it. Like, it's very odd. So they're doing that, and your kid really is being left out of conversations. Your kid really isn't getting invited places because they're not on on Snapchat. And I'm not saying that means give your kid Snapchat, but you need to, as a parent, we need to acknowledge that's real. And we don't need to belittle that or turn it or like make it small. We need to try to find ways to overcome it. Are you calling Susie's mom and be like, hey, you know, Jenny's not on Snapchat. Can you know, I heard the girls were going to the thing. Can you make sure she reaches out to her? Just something. Like, make it known that your daughter needs, or your kid isn't able to communicate that way.
Yeah, yeah? I've seen, so that same person I mentioned earlier, who remain nameless, because I think her mom listens to the podcast. She went to Catholic school her whole life. She is a strong, faith-filled person who can, like, she's gonna be a saint. Mm-hmm. But she was the only one of her friend group who didn't have Snapchat. And she would go, her parents finally gave her permission to go downtown, not Chicago, but downtown where we live. And she was the only one in her friend group at coffee, at lunch, at the festival that was happening downtown that didn't have social media. And all her friends were just on their phone the whole time. That's what kids do. They get together and they get on their phones and they show each other memes. And so I think what you just said, like, to having conversations with parents, and especially your close parent, like your close friends that have kids that are same age as you, and trying to get on the same page is huge. The school that we're going to be sending our oldest back to Catholic school next year, a lot of those parents are getting together to be like, when are you giving your kid a smartphone? When are you going to give your kid this social media? And they're trying to agree on that age so that that doesn't happen. Because it's awkward as adults when we go out and everyone's on their phone. And when you don't have the ability to do that as well, like, you just feel like a loser.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay.
Advice number two.
This is great.
That was number one. Advice number two. Know how to check your Wi-Fi network for additional devices.
What does that even mean?
So you've never given your kid a cell phone, they don't have a cell phone, or you took your kid's cell phone away because they were doing something naughty with it. Great. Their kid in seventh grade, or their friend in seventh grade, handed them an iPod Touch and they brought it home and they put it on the Wi-Fi, and now they're also on Instagram again. Or they got a burner phone and they put it on Wi-Fi. Like, I am not messing with you. A burner phone costs $25 that has, you know, smart features that they can go play Pokemon Go on it. We have them for our kids to play Pokemon Go. We used to. We don't have them anymore. But usually...
You can't call them burner phones, I don't think.
Well,
burner phones are like... Maybe I guess they are.
It's a pay-per-use phone. But if you're not buying the plan for it, you can just put it on Wi-Fi and it works just fine. So you need to be able to know how to go into your internet service provider. Usually they have an app that you can go and you can see every single device that is connected to your Wi-Fi. If you haven't done this already, or you didn't set this up from the first place, kick every single thing off of your Wi-Fi network, change the name, change the password, and then have everybody add them one at a time while you're standing right there. So, like, and then we're putting these into categories. So we just recently reset our Wi-Fi. We put all the Alexas online first. And so those were all labeled into smart home, put that into a category in the app, move that over there. Then we put my husband's and my phone and our watches, our laptops, all of those, our computers, on the Wi-Fi for a second. That was parents. That's a separate category. Now the kids, one at a time, are going to add their phones. We're going to add the Xbox. We're going to add the downstairs family computer, which, by the way, you should have a family computer, not individual computers for your kids. But if they do have laptops because they have school or they have iPads or whatever from school, add those into the kids section. Maybe even separate out the school ones from the regular ones, and then have a kids category. Now that you have them categorized in your Wi-Fi, you can A, tell when some random thing shows up. Yep. Is this a guest in your house? Is your brother visiting and that's why his Wi-Fi or his phone is now on your Wi-Fi? Or did your kid just pick up an iPod Touch because you took away their phone? Like, that's how you're going to be able to know. And it'll give you an alert every time. New new device was added to the Ruby family Wi-Fi network.
Smart.
Cool. So now you can know those things. Parents always think to themselves that if I put limits on my kid's phone, my kid's just going to get around it. But unless your kid is a genius and can like code in Linux or whatever, they're not going to be able to break or to like jailbreak most phones. They're not going to be able to hack the Bark phone or hack their iPhone. All they're doing is very, very easy basic stuff that you just don't know, like getting an iPod Touch.
Smart.
Yeah. So learn to be able to check what devices are on your Wi-Fi network.
All right,
Number three, you need some phone-free zones in your house. Phone-free zones are the most important. It's one of the biggest things. So I would say bedrooms are a phone-free zone, and parents need to follow this as well.
Nope. Nope. That is where I watch basketball during 10-minute breaks.
Sorry.
On Saturdays.
Watch it on the big TV.
That's fine. I can do that.
Always my advice is put it on the big TV.
I like that. Phone-free bedrooms.
Phone-free
kitchen.
In the bedrooms. The kitchen should be a phone-free space. Any place that is... any place where your kids are going to encounter you, and that's, I'm kind of stepping on the toes of number five here, which is you need to do whatever your kids are doing, but like not at the dinner table and not in the bedrooms. And specifically, like we're not, even the school iPad is not going into the bedroom. So if I come in and find my kid's Chromebook from school in the bedroom, I'm like, you know better, take that to the dining room table. We do not have those kinds of single serving screens in bedrooms. Overwhelmingly leads to pornography. And you might think to yourself, oh, but it's the school iPad. They can't look at anything on the... Yes, they can. They absolutely can. They're not paying that close of attention. I assure you they can. So phone-free zones are important. Dinner tables are huge. We used to hear that stat all the time. Like families who eat dinner together have far less depression, far less anxiety, more likely to be out of the poverty line. Like we used to hear that all the time. And we stopped hearing it, I think, because youth sports took over and disliked us saying that. But at the end of the day, it's true. Like spaces where your kids can know they're going to get FaceTime with you is important.
I've heard TVs in the kitchen are not great. Like my parents, we never had the TV on during dinner unless it was like some huge sporting event that, you know. And then no TVs in the bedroom either.
Exactly.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. But the bathroom is a pro phone zone for dads.
I would like to talk to you about hemorrhoids.
The 10-minute scroll and break from the chaos of the four children is necessary for the fathers.
I would tell you that there are statistical things that would show you that the instances of hemorrhoids in adults has gone up substantially since the smartphone became
I am common. Evolutionarily superior because I have not had those.
Reading the shampoo bottle before that. But yeah, and along those same lines, we talk a lot about bringing back the family computer, right? Have a family PC so that whatever's Googled, everybody can see it. And it's in a public room of the house where people are going to see it. Put the things on the big TV. Single serving private devices are what overwhelmingly leads to secrecy. And we're not down for that. Set that precedent right out the gate, and you don't ever have to deal with the question of like, am I violating your privacy?
Yeah, it's also a really good thing to remove temptation. Mm-hmm. Like we need to be able to overcome temptation for sure, but like it's not a bad thing to have a family computer and your kid's never gonna think about doing something inappropriate on there.
Right, because people will see it.
Right.
And that's okay, that's a good thing. Okay, so that's number three, set up phone-free zones. Screen-free zones, if you will, I guess would probably be the better answer. Number four, set limits and put phones to bed. So this is kind of the same, along the same route of don't put them in your rooms, but there needs to be a time when everybody is done with their phones. Sleep improves if you aren't staring at a phone or a screen right before you go to bed. So set a time in your household when like an alarm goes off on all of your Alexas, everybody plugs their phone in. This is the phone's bedtime. It's, 8:30, 9 o'clock, whatever is appropriate for your family. You can set that yourself. But then set limits on your kids' apps. Even when you decide that they're able to have social media, put a 2-hour limit, put a 1-hour limit on each social media app so that they're not just staring at it, scrolling all day, doom scrolling, getting out of control.
Yep.
And the fifth and most important one.
And final.
I know, I already alluded to it, so I feel like I've ruined it, is that you have to practice what you preach. So every single thing that you are putting in place for your kids should be your policy as well. So if your kid has a 1-hour limit on Instagram, you need a 1-hour limit on Instagram. And your kids need to see that limit go off. Like you can be, we've talked before about Instagram, about scrolling the reels with your kids because it's fun, right? You learn things together. You can get interested in a topic together. And it's much better to scroll with a friend than it is to scroll all by yourself. But if your kid sees that limit go off on your phone and you're like, you know what? That's it. We're done for the day. That teaches your kid that it's not just an expectation you have on them because they're a child. And when they're an adult, they can phase out as much as they want. be the person your kid's going to want to grow up and be. Put the phone down, go outside and actually garden. Don't just watch Instagram reels about gardening. Go actually bake the cookies that you just looked at. Go spend time together, play a game, like get off your phone. And when your kids see you doing the things you ask them to do, there's not this weird dynamic of I'm not getting my parents' attention and they're expecting more from me than they do from themselves.
I love that.
Yeah.
Also, it gives you more time to read to your children, which you just did an episode about how important that is.
Well, it's true. You could be reading to your children. That's great information.
Absolutely. And not on your phone.
Not on your phone. I mean, you could read from your phone, I guess, but it would be very hard to read. I can't read on my phone.
Yeah. Yeah,
that millennial thing where they're like, I can't order things from my phone because I need the big internet.
Yep.
Yeah.
You have inspired me to put a limit on Twitter.
You should.
But it's how I get all my news.
I know. I mean, I work on social media for a living and I still have limits on my social medias.
Yeah. Smart. Yep. Twitter's the only one I spend too much time on.
Ugh, Twitter.
During COVID, it was TikTok.
Really?
Yeah.
Every time I open TikTok, I don't know what happened with this algorithm, but I see, I'm pretty sure it's AI bare-chested women and it's stressing me out.
Oh my gosh. Mine's all cooking videos.
I don't actually use it. I downloaded it for an episode we did for Is This For Kids? And I didn't look at it for a year. And then I looked at it and I was like, what is that? What is that?
They're trying stressful. To get you. They're it's trying to get
so
you.
Confusing. I'm not into that. Anyway,
this is good. I will just encourage the parents. I feel like a lot of times, no matter what we're talking about, video games, social media, phones, AI, it just adds a lot of pressure to parents to have to keep up with all this stuff. It's just really important. So yeah. Keep it up. Keep doing your research and enjoy that family time.
Just hang out with your kid. I mean, we always say like, you're not supposed to be the friend. You're supposed to be their parent. Yeah, a little. But like at some point, you're transitioning them into an adult that you would want to hang out with.
Right.
And so like, start doing the work so that you have a virtuous kid that you might actually like once they're an adult.
What a blessing.
Absolutely. Hey, there's a lot going on out there for us parents to know about.
I'm Jonathan Blevins.
I'm Katie, Mrs. Ruby. Let us help you decide.
Is This For Kids?